Chapter 9. Konanos strode through the corridors of the Keystone, kicking aside the last detritus of combat. Muffled cracks still rang out from the lower levels, White Scar's suicide squads left behind to hamper the pursuit. They were proving tough to eliminate, though the end would come within the hour. Kalium's docks had been retaken, purged of residual booby traps, and made serviceable for the 3rd Legion landers to bring in constructor details. It had been a well-fought defense, one that had severely damaged the enemy. It ought to have been satisfying. Konanos entered the Hall of Images, barely looking up at the statues of the Imperial Virtues, abstract representation of things that had once been aggressively promoted. Resilience, reason, industry, thrift. The artistry was shocking. The kind of numb, talentless dross that the officers of propagation had churned out in industrial quantities during the expansion phase. Even before Enlightenment, he couldn't imagine Fulgrim tolerating any of that filth on a 3rd Legion warship. As it was, his troops had defaced those in the Keystone Fortress, replacing the heads of the statues with the bloodied heads of White Scar's warriors, hacking the outstretched arms off, replacing other body parts with various obscenities. Altogether, life was more rewarding under the new dispensation. He reached the portals leading into the facility's mirrored sanctum where Eidolon had chosen to place his command center. The sentries, 2 legionaries wearing gold and sapphire Aquila helm masks, bowed as he passed. The walls beyond glittered with reflected light. The fighting had not penetrated this far into the Keystone superstructure, and so all was intact. Even so, sensory thralls had been busy polishing, refining, re-equipping. Silken drapes hung from the high ceiling in layers, gauze billowing from the clouds of powdery incense pumped out of hovering aroma units. 100 mortal slaves bowed as he passed, their heads pressed against the checkerboard floor, waiting, motionless for orders. Most had been changed, elongated, compressed, blinded, given extra eyes, whatever whims the fleshweavers had felt like indulging. Legionaries lounged among them, some polishing blades, some in a post-combat stupor. Eidolon himself sat atop a throne of lapis lazuli and hammered bronze. Its armrests were carved into the form of 2 rearing serpents, the back molded into a depiction of an open maw lined with curved teeth. Within the creature's mouth, hellish visions writhed, moving subtly by the light of the many candelabra, or perhaps from other sources. Eidolon slumped in his seat, toying with something in the palms of his gauntlets. His helm was gone, and he looked maudlin. Konanos knew why. He felt the same. Combat withdrawal was harder now than it had ever been. The stim comedown was harsh, and only partly ameliorated by lower dose adjustments. The world outside the battlefield had become almost permanently fuzzy, a low-volume, soft-edged dreamscape. At least we can survive its withdrawal now, he thought, perfectly aware of where this direction led. That may not always be true.
Orchestrator, said Eidolon, lifting his bruised chin a fraction. Your armor is disordered.
Konanos smiled. The last White Scar's legionary he had killed had managed to crack his pauldron open. The resultant vox scream had burst the warrior's head, but the loss of symmetry had still been annoying. It will be replaced, Lord, he replied. The order is already with the artificers.
You will have creative suggestions, no doubt.
There will be Chogorian inspirations. Eidolon's eyes drifted over to the silk drapes. His movements were even more sluggish than expected. Perhaps he had dosed himself too vigorously.
I had hoped he might be with them, the Warhawk.
Then we would have lost.
Probably.
Eidolon looked thoughtful.
But how far have we been elevated now, do you think? To slay a Primarch? That would disturb the equilibrium.
Konanos said nothing. Eidolon was entitled to fantasize. He'd probably earned that with the kill tally he'd reaped out on the docking plates. Of all of them, all those gifted with psychosonic hell weapons, he was by far the most proficient. And so, who knew? Perhaps he was even right. Perhaps Fabius had indeed made him a match for a Legion progenitor. Or maybe that was just the old hubris placed in a new vessel. "We have reports from other raids," Konanos said.
"I know them," replied Eidolon, disinterestedly. "Some we won, some we lost.
We blooded them deep."
"Surely, and yet I deem their heart was not truly in it. Tell me, do you know the name, Herivale?"
"Capital world of the Telgam subsector, in counter-compliance for 2 months, now in the final stages of reduction. Why do you ask?"
"What is there on Herivale?"
Konanos had to think. "Medium-grade industrial output. It was populated, and there were plans to raise regiments. Beyond that..."
"Yes, yes. So dull. So much I already know. It was their real target. You know this? They were prepared to surrender Kalium, all to protect their attack there. They knew more than we did. It was our world, one we owned, and we missed something."
Konanos frowned. "I can send scrutinizer teams." Eidolon laughed lazily.
"By the time they get there, the scars will be long gone. You know them."
"Then we go after them." Konanos felt a last spike of combat chems flare up at the thought. "They are running, Lord. We can cut them down as they flee."
"You are not the first to counsel this. Take a look."
Eidolon tossed a slate to Konanos, who caught it one-handed. It was a standard command tablet, used for storing astropathic interpretations. The runes on its crystal surface were in two levels of cipher, then disguised further with references from Chemos mythology. The dream scryers who had taken this message would be dead by now. Any transmission from such a source would have been very carefully protected. It took him a moment to unlock the content. "The War Master," he said eventually. He left unsaid his immediate response. "So he takes more interest in our doings than our own gene father."
"Interesting, is it not?"
remarked Eidolon.
"The Lord of Death hastens towards us. Somehow, Lupercal has got it into his head that we would work well with the 14th Legion. I do not really think that likely, do you?"
"Come, my lord, this is what you wanted," said Konanos, studying the command scripts closely. "Sanction to take on the 5th Legion entire. With the Death Guard, it could be done."
"I had sanction before. I am not some witless menial, nor a son of Horus, to be commanded by that warp-swollen abortion."
Eidolon's gaze kept shifting over to the gauze layers, as if he had buried something behind them that intrigued him.
"So I am not inclined to follow this command. I have had my fill of barbarians, and wish to find other souls to torment. Do you not enjoy it when we toy with Ferris's sons? They die so slowly, and in such rage."
Konanos was about to reply when the great doors of the sanctum suddenly slammed open. The body of a blood-masked door guard skidded through the gap, his weapon knocked from his grasp. Konanos whirled around, grabbing his own bolt pistol. All around the sanctum's margins, legionaries leveled bolters. A lone figure strolled in, clad in the armor of the 3rd Legion, no weapon in his hands. He went helmless, exposing the sculpted features of the Chemosian aristocracy. A pair of ice-blue eyes surveyed Eidolon's court with cool contempt.
"And now,"
Eidolon murmured,
"we have this to torment us."
"My lord," Ravash Kario called out, stepping around the struggling door guard and striding up to the throne. "I had heard it said that the soul severed still prosecuted the war. End my confusion and tell me why you are not already in the void." Eidolon gazed at the intruder, intrigued. Slowly, those around the hall's edges relaxed their grip on their weapons, though muzzles remained angled at Kario's head.
"A palatine blade,"
Eidolon said.
A singular honor. But where is your troop, Prefector? Surely you did not mislay them en route?
Kario came to stand before Eidolon, and Konanos watched him all the way. The Blademaster's bearing was immaculate, his poise impeccable, but the absence of flesh improvement was disappointing. It spoke of a lack of ambition, and fate had a way of punishing that level of pride.
You sent us a tithe of what we asked for, Kario accused, not bothering to acknowledge Konanos. If you had answered the summons, I would be here at the head of a salvaged supply convoy.
Summons, said Eidolon. Is that what you call it?
We have warp wakes. You have means of divining them.
Kario's fury was artfully contained and as cold as marble.
Let them go now and let go the last of your paltry honor.
Now then, brother, I did that a long time ago.
Kario glared up at the throne.
Find them.
You have bolters trained on you from every angle, said Eidolon. Prefector, I do not think you are in a position to give many orders.
Kario had moved before the last syllable left Eidolon's mouth. Konanos opened fire immediately, missing by a fraction. All the others fired, also too slowly. The post-combat narcotics in their blood, the lethargy, it all combined. Kario reached the throne in a single leap, boosting up from the dais and swinging his drawn blade up at Eidolon's fleshy neck. He pressed the saber's steel into the white-grey skin, clamping down on the soul-severed shoulder with his free gauntlet.
No further!
Eidolon cried, addressing his troops, now clustering towards the throne. Konanos, who had trained his pistol on Kario's exposed temple, held his finger against the trigger. By then, the Lord Commander Primus was breathing heavily. His eyes sparkled.
By the gods, you are fast.
And you are grown fat.
Kario's eyes stayed narrow.
Death shrieks will not be heard in the void. There is still a need for the blade.
So you have proved. But withdraw now, please. Against expectation, I find I do not wish to kill you.
Then end this sham. Order the pursuit.
I do not enjoy being instructed at the point of a sword.
Watching the theatrics unfold, Konanos allowed himself a dry smile. Every indication spoke to the contrary. Slowly, Kario withdrew the blade's edge. He pulled back from the throne. The anger remained, though, and he did not sheathe the charnable saber.
For shame, brother,
said Eidolon, his sutured cheeks flushing as he adjusted his position.
There was a time when we would debate our strategy with fine words.
Kario looked distastefully up at the silks, the twisted slaves, the puffs of incense.
There was a time when words were enough.
But what makes you suppose I have any means of finding the Khan?
Eidolon was still enjoying himself.
He has a reputation, you know.
Kario stepped down from the dais and strode over to the lengths of silk. With a twin strike of his blade, one, two, he slashed the curtains aside. Behind them, suspended on golden chains far above the checkerboard floor, hung a side of meat. Once, it had been more than that, a superhuman warrior clad in ivory ceramite. Now, it was mere flesh and sinew, quivering, kept alive by pain machines clamped to its brainstem, its spine, what remained of its face. A fixed, silent scream was locked on its skinless face, looped through the coils of agony amplifiers. Psychically attuned plates had been set on either side of its temples, each one feeding cables that looped up to the incense-clouded ceiling. Despite its lack of eyes, it sensed the removal of its silk shroud and twitched.
Learn much yet? Kario asked.
Eidolon shrugged.
We have made a start.
Kario finally scabbarded his saber. He turned back to the throne.
Do this thing, and word shall go to every Palatine fraternity in the sector. If you grow weary of the game, consider at least the aesthetics. We can do this to all of them.
Eidolon eyed the Prefector hungrily then. That was the key to him, Konanos realized. The Lord Commander Primus no longer fought for the cause, for the Primarch, even for himself. He fought to keep himself amused.
The Death Lord burns through the warp, said Eidolon. He has been ordered to join with us. Did you know this?
Kario fixed his blue eyes on his nominal master. It changes nothing. Eidolon smiled.
It changes everything.
He turned to Konanos.
And you would be in accord with this, I take it.
Always.
Yes, always.
Eidolon sat back in the throne, his eyes fixed on Kario.
I needed something to stir my blood again. Perhaps you are it.
The Prefector turned away, unconcerned. Whatever you need, he said, his voice low, just get me close enough. I ask nothing more. A fleet muster was a critical time. For most of the years-long campaign following Prospero, the White Scars had been dispersed. Chondax had been an aberration, a rare instance of the entire Legion operating as one. As the forces of the Warmaster had pressed their advantage, the 5th Legion had reverted to type, splitting up, forming autonomous battalions, using their speed and voidcraft to stay one step ahead of destruction. Now, new orders had been given out. The ships were pulling back, squadron by squadron, battling their way across the turbulent ether seas to join with a command group in the Aurelian system. Those that had already made it now hung in high orbital anchor above Aurelian III, a giant of indigo gas swathes and violent electrical storms. Large-scale void war was always hard to prosecute with any certainty. In the absence of any reliable detection systems working over supra-system scales, fleet commanders had to judge enemy positions via a mix of warp-wake soundings, uncertain espionage, psychic reading, or blind luck. Galactic wars were not fought to conquer contiguous territorial zones. They were battles over the thousand points of light amid the endless dark, fortress worlds that could be attacked from any direction at any time. The existence of fronts and salients, though widely referred to by the strategos, was in the strictest sense inaccurate, since physical void extension was only erratically mapped to the underlying currents that governed the immaterium. Before Horus had launched his run to the throne world, no such assault, not even at Ulanor, had truly deserved to be described as a single battlefront. Only the Warmaster's advance, through its sheer scale and audacity, carried the volume of destruction necessary to amount to a coherent line of ravaged worlds. And even then, the gaps were far larger than areas of compassed, controlled space. Nonetheless, placing all major Legion assets in one place was a risk, particularly as the enemy outnumbered the White Scars many times over. The Khan had studiously avoided massed engagement throughout the years of open war, knowing that it would end him. Only as the net closed in and the policy of targeted raids became less effective did the strategy change. The process was perilous from beginning to end. Astropathic messages could be intercepted, encryptions deciphered, physical comms broken. It would have been far safer to linger at Aurelion for just a few days, but it would take far longer than that to assemble the sundered Legion warships, during which time their location was always liable to be uncovered. A policy of misinformation had been triggered alongside the true communications effort, something made easier by the difficulty non-Chagorians had in understanding Quarchin inflections. False gatherings were seeded into astropathic screeds, incorrect names mingled with true instructions. Suicide squads had been sent out to far-flung locations to lend credence to dummy musters, each trajectory carefully rigged to resemble the real thing. Now, all that could be done had been done. The Ordu was drawing itself back together, preparing for the exercise that would see it fulfill its vows or destroy itself in the attempt. Every serviceable frigate had been placed on the perimeter of Aurelion's gravity well, and an ever-shifting sphere of fleet pickets now patrolled far into the system reaches. All approaches to the Mandeville Point had been heavily mined, save for the one clear path left to allow ingress and egress for ships with the requisite code chains. From a private observation chamber at the summit of the Swordstorm's command tower, the architect of the policy observed his fleet coming into coherence. He watched the sleek lines of the Ko Fian slide past the immense shadow of the Lance of Heaven, with the Chin Sa some way off, having only broken the veil 2 hours previously. Every battleship bore heavy damage. Those that had recently made the warp stage from Kalium were the worst, and were now surrounded by heavy shells of void scaffolds, over which swarmed Legion repair teams and Mechanicum overseer details. No lumens had been lit in the Khan's chamber. 2 candles burned, each one scented with oils from Chogoris. One was Irial, the anointment given to those about to head into battle. The other, Gagan, that smeared on the foreheads of those who had died. Between the candles were the 2 pieces of Qin Zhar's dragon helm, his blood still stained across the inside curve. When that helm had been brought before the Primarch, he had said nothing. He had sat on the command throne of the Swordstorm's bridge, the pieces in his lap, his dark eyes focused on the metal, as if by boring into them he could somehow reverse the fate of its owner. None had dared disturb him for orders, and the flagship's crew had held silent station, breath caught, waiting. Eventually, the Primarch had lifted his severe profile from the broken helm and given the order he had put off for too long.
No more! Order the Master!
And so they had made for Aurelian. The Master of the Horde had withdrawn to his private chambers, and none had broken the sanctity of his meditation space. It was the same space in which he had received his father the last time the two of them had been alone together. Back then, they had both stood before the great crystal flex ports, watching as the night curve of terror had rolled slowly beneath them. They had exchanged few words prior to separation, for words were ever hard to come by between them. They had skirted around the issue that divided them, the imperial truth, for neither had wished to part on poisonous terms. And so the Khan's most lasting memory of his Jean Sire, more profound than the great displays of power on Ulanor, more lasting even than the first glorious descent to the plains of Jagoris, was of a very human awkwardness. He had attempted to speak to the Swordstorm's majesty, to highlight what a superlative ship his artisans had made with what they had been given.
"Nothing is faster," he had said. "Nothing serves you better. We have poured our hearts into this and made it perfect."
His father had understood that. He had appreciated the ingenuity of the changes. More than any other, he comprehended the ancient technology at the heart of his Imperium's war vessels, for his genius lay behind the ancient templates, just as it lay behind all else that was significant in the expanding galactic empire. And yet, he had not praised his son for his labors, for that had never been his way. His proud face, so hard to perceive clearly, so ineffable and so severe, had never moved from consideration of the stars beyond the armor-glass.
"And even these," the Emperor had said, "are fleeting."
What had that meant? There was no good in asking, for the Master of Mankind never explained. At the time, the Khan had taken the remark to be a reference to the Swordstorm's speed, but later on he could no longer sustain the illusion. Everything in his father's demeanor had suggested impatience, a desire to move on from what had been done to what might yet be done. The Emperor had been talking about something else, something to come after what he had built amid the ruins of Terra's past, something that had not been revealed. Now, when all had been cast into the flames, the Khan returned to that moment more and more. There were nights when it gave him hope, for there was always the chance that the Emperor had somehow foreseen this great rupture, and that it meshed with his designs in some way. And such would not be completely impossible, for his genius in the beginning had been untouchable, accepted even by those who had fought futilely against his rise. But he could not sustain that hope for long. With every defeat, every astropathic tiding of another ravaged world, it became clear that the great designs had been derailed, and that Horus had acted for reasons that were entirely his own. For all the centuries in the planning, the Emperor's vision had proved fallible, open to assault, apt for destruction.
What were you intending?
The Khan asked himself, watching the shadows of his great warfleet preparing themselves.
You were never a fool. You knew the risks of leaving the war to your sons. There must be something else.
Perhaps Magnus had known. Perhaps those who had been closest to the Emperor in council, Dorn, Gilliman, Fulgrim, had done so as well. The Khan had never been close. He and his father had been different in all things, servants of different creeds, with as much innate sympathy as the nomads had always had for the settled. If there was a reason for the Emperor's decisions after the triumph, then the White Scars would not have been told of it. They would have been let loose, just as they had always been, to take the war to the outer margins of the Empire, to be forgotten until they were needed again, feared, disregarded, as unwholesome as Russ's berserkers, but without the predictability.
So, I fight for a father who I never loved, against a brother that I did. I defend an empire that never wanted me against an army that would have taken me in a heartbeat.
And yet, the oath had been made. The promise could not be broken. Seeing Mortarion's fall had been enough, as had the visions of ruin on Prospero. Horus had swapped one tyrant for others, ones that would eventually devour him. If it had been a mistake to pretend the warp never existed, it was an even greater one to believe the words of those who dwelled within it. The lines had been drawn. All that remained was to put each side to the test. Jagatai turned away from the vista, back towards the candlelit chamber. Silhouetted under the arch beyond Kinjar's memorial altar was the outline of Jubal Khan. He had not moved, waiting for the command to approach, until then standing as still and silent as stone.
Come, ordered the Khagan,
walking past the altar and descending a shallow flight of stairs. Jubal fell in alongside him, and together they entered another chamber below the observation level. There, rough-cut sandstone walls were hung with calligraph scrolls. Fires burned in lined circular pits, just as they had done in the old Talskar realms. The lightning strike of the Legion had been inlaid in gold over the far wall, and the metal glinted from the dancing flames. Hides hung tight from wooden racks, scraped clean, as taut as sinews.
Did you see him fall?
Asked the Khan, reaching for a goblet of Halak, the fermented lactose that only a Chagorian's constitution absorbed without challenge.
No, Khagan, we were sundered by battle.
He was brought home by the sorcerer.
He was.
The Khan took a long sip, savoring the acrid taste.
They tell me the Kalium Gate was mined. Fleet augurs detected them once we were close,
said Jubal, standing stiffly before his master, his hands by his sides. They looked similar, those two, the hooked nose, long oil-black hair, earth-dark skin.
We could not have used the portal. So you called off the attack. The numbers were too great. If the gate had been intact, then you would have fought on further, hoping to turn the tide, and still lost.
The Khan had already studied all the battlefield reports and had gauged every tactic employed by every detachment.
Just as you said, the numbers were too great. It was well that you withdrew when you did, for they are getting better at reading us.
He stared into the depths of his goblet. The murky liquid gazed back.
Khagan, are you angered?
Jubal asked cautiously.
Angered?
It was another loss. The Kashiga...
Jubal trailed off. The Khan felt a spasm of pain and paused before replying.
Kinjar took 1,000 souls with him. He more than accounted for himself. That is all we can hope for, is it not?
He looked up directly at Jubal.
We could huddle together, hoping to avoid danger in numbers, and perhaps the war would pass us by. Or we could strike at the enemy where he travels, trusting to fate to guard our souls.
his lips pressed together, as close as he got to a smile, though he did not entirely hide the hurt.
The wind blows east, the wind blows west. Our fortunes will change.
He moved over to two stools, arranged as the Altaic war chief would have had them, low to the stone floor, crisscrossed lengths of wood slung with cured hides. Each one was far larger than the old mortal-scale warlord thrones, built for the outsized bulk of the Legiones Astartes. The Khan gestured towards one and sank down into the other. His long limbs, clad in a crimson kaftan, stretched out lithely over the leather. Jubal did as he was bid, though uncomfortably. Like most of the Ordu, he preferred to stand or take the saddle.
I need a new Kashiga, the Khan said.
Namahi is a fine choice.
I have not yet spoken to him. I wished to speak to you.
Jubal looked even more uncomfortable.
Kagan, you do me too much honor.
Too much honor.
More than I deserve.
Jubal looked up to face him.
The master of the Keshig is your right arm. He is your sword. He must know your mind like none other. I was not on Chondax, nor Prospero. There are others with better claim.
Hasik is gone. Jemulan is gone. The list is shorter than you think.
What of Taxia?
What of him?
There are many in the Brotherhoods who would wish it for him.
My warriors wish for many things. I am not bound to grant them.
The Khan took another sip.
Shiban was a poet, Yeshugai tells me. Now he does not write, he does not sing, and he does not laugh.
He swilled the cup around before him, watching the play of light on the rim.
I guard more than the Ordu's fighting strength, Jubal. There are those under my command who fight with the sun of the plains in their eyes. There are those who reflect the darkness of the enemy, for it has entered their blood. Both will kill at my command, but I take no joy, and never have, in killing without artistry. Do you see what I am saying?
It will not sit well with those who name him Restorer.
And that disturbs you? Not at all, so long as you know. Let them whisper.
The Khan put the goblet down.
So, we have it then. You will not outright refuse me. I give you this honor and you will accept it grudgingly. Your feet dragged to my side like a whipped lad.
Jubal laughed, despite himself.
You reject my counsel. So what remains? My blade is yours, Kagan, as it always has been. But grant me one thing. I will not take the title. Kinjar was the only master of the Keshig you have known. I will not live in his shadow.
The Khan inclined his head.
So be it. You are the hunter, the slayer of beasts. Thus I name you An-Ezen, master of the hunt. How does that sound in your ears?
Jubal rose to his feet and bowed low.
Kagan, it is fitting.
The Khan rose in turn and drew his tulwar. He held it before him, letting the curved shadow fall over Jubal's flame-lit face.
I shall hold you to the name. No more the Lord of Summer Lightning, but my huntsman, my wide ranger, my bringer of trophies. You will bring honor to the Horde, even as the darkness falls. Be sure of it.
The Khan placed the sword's edge against Jubal's cheek, balancing it perfectly, resting it on the edge of the raised scar.
Let there be no illusion. The way ahead will be dark.
Then he drew it away, flashing the steel against the firelight before placing it back in its ivory sheath.
We are running out of room, An-Ezen. All must change. Aye, it must. The storms hem us. We cannot run these raids any longer. I bring the Ordu together, even those who once broke the law of the Altak. We shall meet this thing united.
Then can you tell me yet? Jubal asked. What is your purpose?
Not yet. I await tidings from my counselor, said the Khan,
a wry look on his scarred face.
I sense him now. He is close. In truth, it was for him that I sent my sons into peril. If he brings the tidings we hope, then there may yet be a way to my father's side, and to the walls of Terra.
And if not?
If not, then we cannot leave the void,
the Khan said bleakly.
We shall die here, but we shall yet make it such a death as songs are sung of.
He reached for his goblet and drained the last of it.
But the galaxy will know before long, he said then. One way or the other, that defiance yet exists in this crooked house of lies.